Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Welcome to this Wedlake Bell podcast, and thank you for listening. My name is Suzanne Gill. I'm a partner in our commercial property team and co-founder of our Tomorrow's City, Today's Challenge campaign. With me today to discuss cities and their future is Graham Schoen, who's senior analyst at the Estates Gazette. Graham's recently written a series of three articles for the Estates Gazette on shifting working patterns following the pandemic, and I'm delighted he's able to join us today. Graham, white-collar workers have by and large gone from working in an office to working at home. Do you think this is a pandemic-only blip or something that's here to stay?
First of all, thanks for having me and for that very nice introduction. Pleasure to be here. The short answer to that is no, I don't. I don't think it's going to be a pandemic only. I don't think there's going to be an instant flock back to the office. I believe this is probably something that some people have wanted for a while. And actually, where I think this could have been a kind of decade-long gradual shift into more flexible or distributed work, I think what the pandemic has done by necessity, obviously, has just accelerated that and made it more of a step change. I think what's really interesting to see at the moment is the effect that it's actually having on businesses in terms of their individual sectors, so the individual actual roles within businesses. So I think what the pandemic has done, it's probably throw a light on not only the ability, I think, of teams to work remotely and get things done, but also on the intrinsic value that an office has for some teams and some businesses. And I think going forwards out of this, the most important thing for firms and for employees is to understand properly how they're able to split their work and their tasks and everything else and their interactions between a consolidated kind of HQ, homework, or working from home when they have to do maybe tasks that they just have to do on an individual basis, perhaps a little bit more. And what I called in one of the articles or the report is kind of a third space almost, somewhere maybe close to their home that they're happy to kind of go out and work in, perhaps taking the guise of a serviced office. Well, that's quite hard to do. If you're a firm and you're trying to understand which office to or which kind of membership to take, you need to know where all your employees are living and how best to kind of to actually activate that. So that's what I think will happen going forward. I think you'll see people coming back to the office after depending on kind of what happens next year, an innumerable amount of months of having to work at home and the challenges that brings. But you'll then see over the course, I think, of the next decade, things just start to level out a little bit and for people to actually get a proper balance between going into the office, doing the commute, and doing their work remotely.
I think that's really interesting to hear you talk about the differences between sectors and also to bring out the ease of remote working, which has turned out to be a lot more easy than many people thought, but also the limitations on it, that we really need the human contact, which, as you say, creates space for a hub where people can work together, whether that's the HQ or whether it's more distributed in various locations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is the interactions thing is critical, I think. If you're talking about kind of today's city and tomorrow's challenges, today's city is kind of, it's the entire serendipity of being able to work closely with people and the kind of cross-pollination of ideas. And this is kind of, it's obviously, cities are where kind of a lot of the economic growth over the last kind of decade, if you like, has taken place. In the report, I mentioned, if you look at deciles by office stock, the top decile, or the top 10% of councils for office stock actually contributes around about 35% or something like that of gross value added. You know, this is where businesses are able to convene, to share ideas, to share processes, to improve. And also, this is obviously where people are coming into. And kind of, again, this has just been the gradual shift, I think, over a couple of decades in basically having these kind of urban hubs as where all of the kind of nation's activity really happens. But again, like I said, and as you've mentioned, the challenges of each individual business sector will be in how best to kind of move that forward. And for office landlords, it's how do we reconcile the fact that the accepted truths that we've had over a number of years that X amount of people will be coming into urban centres to work. Most people want to come into urban centres to work. I think that's also something that's perhaps been a little bit lost over the last year or so. If you look at the What Workers Want survey, which is done by Savills, I think, every year, around about 58% of the responders said their preferred work location is actually in a town centre or a city centre. Most people like that. It's you know, because of the added other benefits of it, the socialisation, the ability to kind of go and eat out and things like that after work as well, amenities being close. All of these things are kind of filtered into the society and the work environment that we as a country have built over the last few decades. And COVID's kind of come along and disrupted it in really an unforeseen kind of way. And I guess if you're a landlord of property, a lot of those kind of building blocks have just been chipped away at over the last, you know, kind of 7 to 8 months or so, and you're trying to reconcile how best to move forward. You know, where do we think these shifts are going to happen? Where are the areas that are actually going to benefit from this kind of step change? And even if it does kind of filter back to something a little bit more equal in terms of central HQ work and you know kind of regional work or people working from home, there's going to be areas that stand to gain and lose from that, which again I mentioned in the report because I think it's a critical distinction to make really.
Another part of your report did focus on the impact on the residential market. If we're working from home more often, we're commuting less, and that has an impact for house builders. What sort of areas are likely to be winners and losers, in your opinion?
So I think what you might actually see, and this could happen a little bit more over the kind of medium term, some suburbs, I think, might actually suffer because I think the commute maths that go into assessing kind of where people live, I mean, this is the trade-off that most people make now. A lot of people don't kind of work super close to where they live. Their office just isn't. And that's, the kind of the work environment that we've built in the country. Most people make that assessment of how much time am I willing to trade between my home life and where I go into the office. And I think if people are only doing that 3 or 4 times a week or between 2 and 4 times a week rather than 5, I think you're going to get an extended acceptable commute. I think that's basically what's going to happen. Mm. I think you're going to get some commuter towns or some maybe kind of extraneous suburbs around urban centres that are going to do very well off the back of this. Some of the areas kind of in the kind of immediate proximity to cities that, again, rely heavily on their transport connections to those cities, I think are actually going to see a little bit of a correction in the immediate term. But also what's interesting, even today, if we think about the kind of boom in or semi-boom, I'd say, in city centre living that's attracted some of the biggest players in terms of build to rent and the big institutional investors in those cities to attract those young professionals to high quality rental accommodation. Legal & General this morning have actually announced they're going to launch something similar, but tacked as a suburban centric build to rent arm. So they're looking specifically at moving kind of what they've done relatively successfully in the city centres out into suburban areas and then trying to attract kind of, you know, families and again, kind of young professionals into a broader or different rental product. So again, what will be interesting is actually to follow them, see where exactly they're targeting, because suburb is such a, like I say, it's such a broad term. It's very, very hard to pin them down as to where they actually are geographically. Where does it start and end? But yes, I think once kind of we get a bit more meat on the bone of what they're doing, it'll be kind of clear, I think, to all our house builders as to where some of the areas are that they might need to target.
One thing that really marks your report out from the day-to-day market analysis is that you were positive about retail and the high street. Talk to me about that.
Sort of positive, yeah. I try to be. I want to look for it where I can. Yeah, I suppose I mentioned really at the start of it, the report, that the office sector is probably the one that's going to be most profoundly impacted purely by the fact that this shift has almost happened inordinately quickly. For retail, this is really interesting. So I think over the last couple of decades, like the evolution of the knowledge economy and just the way, you know, how we're kind of shifting into much more of a white collar nation. You look at the sectors that have grown in terms of employment numbers since 2000 or even since 2007. They're all in professional sectors. It's administrative and secretarial and scientific and technological. So everything that retailers and operators need to consider is it's heavily shifting towards where those white collar workers are for the majority of their week, of their time. And what's interesting, I think, to look at, and what I wanted to do that I thought was a bit different, is to look at the relationship between retail, specifically in places that have a high concentration of office employment or a high concentration of in-situ residents that I can designate as being office workers. And what is clear is that there's more retail occupation, there's higher retail occupation in those areas that are, you know, heavily populated or more heavily populated by white collar workers. And again, it's something that may have been self-evident to people. It could be, okay, fine, you know, that's what we expected. But to see it actually measured in statistics was, I think, really interesting to me. And I think there is, again, you're going to see, if there is a marked shift over the kind of course of 5 years in terms of people staying close to where they live more often, it may well mean that some of those areas that I think firstly have a high concentration of office, of white-collar dwellers, if you like, white-collar residents, but they have quite a poor retail kind of occupation rate. I think those are the places that might actually end up picking up and may well see a little bit more kind of strength or more life given into some of their local high streets, particularly, again, if there's an enduring, I guess, conscientiousness around localism, around relying on local services, as kind of happened, you know, particularly during the first lockdown. I think people became a lot more conscious of that. But it'll also require, I think, local kind of governmental leadership as well. I think people kind of say quite often or ask quite often, you know, well, what should we do? What should we do with this high street or that high street? How do we get people back there? I always say, like, data is always your friend. I would say that because, you know, I'm an analyst. It's my, you know, it's my job to kind of, you know, like, kind of sing the praises or underline the virtues of using data as much as you can. But yeah, I mean, I'm positive about retail insofar as I think that some of the areas can actually, I guess, kind of reignite their high streets.
We had a previous really interesting Tomorrow's City, Today's Challenge seminar with Professor Laura Vaughan at UCL, and she'd looked at high streets through the decades, a great longitudinal study. And her view summarised was that a thriving high street needs a third retail, a third residential, and a third employment use nearby. And that mixture is what makes it successful. The 50s stereotype of the husband who travels into work while the housewife does a bit of light shopping at home every day to prepare the evening meal has never made a great high street. You need employment as well to make a strong district.
Absolutely, yeah. There's some really good, there's also good work by the Centre for Cities, which I think I reference in the report as well. That just mentions how business, like areas with relatively strong employment use or exporter businesses, as they call them, are much more likely to have, you know, a strong high street. And I think that there can be a little bit more of the distribution from city centres moving forward. You think about the kind of the outsized impact on gross value added, you know, it's huge. There's potential for that to just kind of pare down a little bit and move down into smaller towns, I think. But yeah, and people living kind of near or onto, or, you know, kind of on high streets as well, is an interesting kind of notion. There's a bit of a, yeah, to do about, you know, kind of planning and how do you convert retail? Should it be easily converted to homes? And it's kind of, there's a lot of kind of implications on that front as well. But yeah, that's another huge challenge, is in how we actually manifest the oversupply of retail into much more productive and much more profitable, you know, uses of space. And it's interesting if, you know, that kind of 50s stereotype has never actually served the high street particularly well. This is a wonderful opportunity to just finally, you know, get formally kind of consign it to the annals of history and make something far, far better and far more sustainable.
I think that's right. I think what you've showed us through your report and the conversation today is that changes in white collar work have potential to have a huge impact on the entire real estate ecosystem. And you summarised the challenge perfectly then when you were alluding to the super productive nature of cities and certain business districts and how we reconcile that with a need for a bit of work-life balance through less commuting. Graham, thank you so much for your time and such an interesting discussion today.
Pleasure. Thank you again for having me.
A reminder to listeners that the Shifting Working Patterns report is free to download on the Estates Gazette website. And I'll be back soon to discuss the post-pandemic challenges for tomorrow's city with other guests. So do look out for our next podcast in this series. Thank you all for listening and goodbye.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell, building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.